Ideas are worth nothing without execution. Steve Jobs said that, adding, execution is worth millions. Steve Jobs was pointing out what he observed in his time as the head of Apple and Pixar. It was that people have no shortage of ideas, and often people get caught up in the fun and excitement of having a new idea, which is all fine and dandy, and can be the seed that grows into something amazing, but that's all it is. It's just the seed. If you don't plant it, you don't nurture it, you don't water it, grow it, then it's not going to feed you. So ideas without execution are worth pretty much nothing. That means execution is everything, which sounds complicated, but it's really just taking action. Everything that you want in life comes on the other side of action. Welcome to Change Made Easy. Changing your habits, routines, and actions is hard. We make it easy. My name is Paul Levitin. I am a board-licensed health and wellness coach and behavior change specialist, and I have been working for over 10 years with people just like you, helping them build better habits, routines, and actions into their lives so they can achieve their goals. If you aren't taking action right now and you have a goal you are trying to accomplish, that means something has to change. And if you want to be able to sustain a change, you have to make it easy. And that's why I'm so excited for you to hear today's conversation. Agi Karamidis is an author and podcaster, and he hosts a podcast called Personal Development Mastery. And he recently released his first book titled 88 Actionable Insights for Life, in which he distilled down the top lessons and strategies he learned from interviewing hundreds of elite performers on personal development. Agi is one of my favorite guests, and this is his second time appearing on the show. If you want to listen to our first conversation, you can go scroll back a few weeks to the episode titled Personal Development Mastery, which I've also linked to in the show notes. So check out that episode as well. And since connecting on the first podcast we did together, I've actually been a guest on Agi's podcast 2 times, and he's been a great mentor and teacher for me in my pursuit in growing this podcast. On this episode, Agi reveals the most important lesson that he has learned from interviewing hundreds of top-performing entrepreneurs, athletes, healers, and coaches. We also discuss the categories of personal development, as well as the importance of expanding your emotional vocabulary. And you're definitely going to want to stick around to the end of the episode because, spoiler alert, Agi is going to give you a free copy of his brand new book. So with that being said, please enjoy this conversation with Agi Karamidis. In your book, 88 Actionable Insights for Life, you talk about the 10 categories for personal growth. Could you go into those and either break down all 10 or a handful of the ones that you have found to be the most impactful?
Thank you. I'm very glad that I have the book right next to me because I would be a little bit unprepared to tell them by heart, but it's a great question. I will give a little bit of a preface here so that what I'm about to say makes more sense. So the book is called 88 Actionable Insights for Life, and there are insights that I've gained either directly or indirectly from my podcast. And because there is, my podcast is Personal Development Mastery, so there is a variety of topics. So I broke them down and I separate them into separate categories. So these 88 insights, they're not randomly scattered in a book, so you don't know where to start. They are categorized, and I think that's very important. So I will share some of the categories now. The first one, passion and purpose. So actionable insights about, you know, discovering or uncovering your purpose or some. There is one particular insight that talks about the, you know, how some believe that our purpose must be a grandiose mission, you know, to impact 1 billion people. It's nothing like that. So there are each of the insights, I will also add this, is short. So it is 1-2 pages. The most is 3 pages long. So they are quite quick to, you know, read. So one category, very important, setting goals and achieving them. Then I have something that is right down your alley, body health, wellness. Then one so important, master your emotions and master your state. Then I have a category of gratitude, which is a trait, a state of being. It is many things, gratitude, but it is, I believe, one of the cornerstone ingredients in living a happy life, a fulfilled life, a successful life. And then some more I have are visualization, some mindset traits, and so on. A couple of more, you know, and some final tools. So that's, you know, in an overview of some of the categories. One, I think, one of my personal favorites is mastering your emotional state, because, as I said, it's so essential. I can't find such a strong word to. I can't overemphasize.
Yeah, one, I think it's great how you broke all of this down into categories, small 1, 2, 3 page insights, as you said, actionable insights. I'm all about action. And with too much information, we get that information overload and we end up just reading or never even reading the book and it never goes anywhere. So I love that you kept it short and sweet and simple to make this something that people can actually go out and take action with. And I would love for you to expand about the emotional piece, because that, I think, as you said, is can't be overstated, the importance of this. And while, you know, gratitude gets talked about a lot, and obviously health and wellness get talked about a lot, the understanding and controlling your emotions kind of almost underpins all of that. So could you expand on maybe some of the action steps or why you think it's so important and how we can start to wrap our heads around this?
Yes, thank you for the question. It certainly underpins other things, because as we all know, when our emotional state is low, then we certainly don't take the same decisions, the same actions as we would take, all other things being equal, if we were, you know, elated at that time. So the actions, the decisions are different. So the thing with emotions and emotional state is that many times, unless one trains, and I will use that word, trains to understand it and therefore being able to cope with it, if that doesn't happen, it tends to overtake us. And I think, you know, we all can relate to having a sudden urge of anger, for example, and, you know, being sometimes completely unconscious or unable to stop it, and it just goes and intensifies. So mastering our ability to handle, I'm choosing the words carefully because it's not changing them, or let's say handle them, or handle ourselves while the emotion is there, probably even better word, way to describe it. It's certainly, I believe, one of the cornerstones of, and that's what I said earlier, the foundations of a happy life, a fulfilled life, success, whatever it is that you want. I will tell you, ask me about specific actions, and one of them that I'm looking now is, it's great, it's also very practical. It's called Enhance Your Emotional Vocabulary. And, you know, many, I will give an example that I think 99% of the audience will relate if they're not doing it already. So it's the answer to the question, how are you? Which we probably hear, you know, how many times a day. So, how are you? I'm fine. Or, you know, I'm not that good. Or something like that. That is it. So that, first of all, is not a conscious response. It's completely automated, at least the vast majority of time. You just say something that it's very common. On the other hand, I think that is a big lost opportunity, first of all, to be more self-reflective, because at that time, when someone asks you, how are you? I will add here the word, how are you feeling? Okay, that's how I would, translate the question. It's a wonderful opportunity to either look at that time inside of us and describe how we're feeling, or something that is, that's also, I will put an action before that, because that to happen, you need to practice it. Otherwise, you will. It's easy to return to the default and say, I'm fine, thank you, and then remember, oh, that guy on the podcast was talking about, reflecting on how I'm feeling, but I forgot. One great practice you can do to enhance it, and it's all about taking the action. Otherwise, the theory, what we can talk about wonderful things, but unless you do it, it won't make any difference. So the practice is, if you journal in the morning, to spend 1 minute writing down how you're feeling. And this can be even one word, but not a word like, happy, or I feel okay, or a word that is really part of an enhanced vocabulary. And there is an example vocabulary that was from one of my guests. So I will give an example so that it becomes more clear of what I'm talking about. So he calls it the emotional vocabulary. And it has main different categories. For example, you could be feeling peaceful, like the big bracket of peaceful, or happy, or on the other hand, fearful or confused. Okay, so I'll give a couple of examples from, one of the positive, states, and one of the non-positive. So instead of happy, you could say, I feel happy today. But you could say, I feel glad, joyful, cheerful, encouraged, delighted, excited, elated, proud, hopeful, confident, optimistic, ecstatic, exhilarated, wonderful. You can download and have the vocabulary right next to you. But this gives you the ability to be more reflective, because I'm not just happy, I am excited because of this and that. So that, and I will bring it back to what I was saying earlier, once you practice this exercise as a journaling exercise, the emotional vocabulary, when someone asks you, so how are you feeling today, you can actually say what you have been journaling about. But anyway, so imagine if someone asks you, so how are you today, and you say, you use the word that you have been journaling about, reflecting, which is actually your how you're feeling that day. The two benefits that I can directly, imagine coming from that, one is that you are more self-reflective with your emotions, and therefore that allows further to improve them. And the other, it also gives a great handle to have an intriguing conversation with another human being, rather than closing it, fine, thank you. And because if you use and you say, I'm feeling mischievous today, the other person will probably lean in and say, okay, so what do you mean? What? So that's one example out of the, mastering your emotional state, Paul.
Hey, real quick. We'll be back to the show in just a few seconds, but right now I have to ask you for a huge favor. If you're getting value out of this episode so far, take 2 seconds and share it with a friend. I mean, right now, literally, hit the little share button and send it in a text to your roommate or your cousin or your mom or your brother or your sister. Seriously, spread the love. If you like what you're hearing, then that's the best way that you can show support for this show. Because maybe you're like Eliza Kay, who said, this podcast is both warm and inviting, but real enough to push and motivate me. Or you're like Dalton, who said, Paul is an amazing host and his podcast is a must listen. Don't you want to share this awesomeness with your friends and family? Don't be a gatekeeper. It only takes a second, It helps me grow and reach a new audience, and you seem like a genius friend who recommends new, awesome podcasts. We all win. All right, go send that text. And now, let's get back to the show.
It's really, really interesting and sounds simple, but there's actually so many different pieces of that that I want to kind of touch on. The first thing is it's interesting because I don't think I've ever spoken about this on the podcast, but I actually made a decision years ago that whenever someone asks me, how are you doing or what's up, what's going on, that I'll only answer with excellent or amazing. Because when I started to learn about the subconscious mind, and I realized that what you say over and over gets programmed into your subconscious. And this is when I was working at a gym. So I would be at the gym for 8 hours a day, and there's hundreds of members, and I knew a lot of them. They'd always come up to me as they come in and out throughout the day. Again, I'm there all day, but I'm seeing hundreds of different people throughout the day. Hey, Paul, how's it going? Hey, Paul, what's up? And I thought, if every time it's fine, okay, it's going, what message is that programming into my subconscious? But if I say amazing every time, 100 times a day, 200 times a day, 300 times a day, what message is that programming into my subconscious mind? And ever since then, that's exactly how I ask. That's probably the question that we get asked the most out of any question, just as humans going throughout our lives. You're at the cash register, you're at the drive-thru, you're talking to the person at the bank, whatever it is. How you doing? How's it going? First thing when you pick up the phone, over and over and over. So this literally programs us, and it's something that we have direct control over. As you said, Augie, it is practice, but your step goes a little bit deeper than mine, because mine was just taking, it's still a kind of surface level thing, but I want to flip it to a positive. So rather than just being, it's okay, it's good, it's amazing. But what I like is the digging deeper into the next layer emotion of it's not just happy, as you said, it's elated, it's joyous, it's all of these different things, because there's a concept of naming your emotions to be able to claim it, right? It's very, when everything is just good or bad, it's like, well, that's very bland. Mm. But when you dig a little bit deeper into the actual real feeling, as you said, mischievous, devious, content, these are all different things that have different meanings for us. And it's a layer of introspection, just journaling on it, or even just being open to thinking about this stuff and starting to catch yourself using these words. Start to notice that's the first step. Start to notice how many times a day you say it's going when someone says, hey, what's going on? Ah, it's going. Ah, it's all right. Same old, same old. And start to think, what is the messaging you're sending to yourself, and how much more powerful it could be if you just start to decide. Sometimes my day isn't going amazing, but when someone asks me that and I say amazing, that's a trigger to my brain to go into gratitude mode, because if I'm saying it's amazing, there must be a reason that it's amazing. So now I have to look for something that made my day amazing. Well, I woke up today. Well, I have electricity. Well, I have a great partner. I have a dog. I have all of these things. So even when I want to say, oh, it's going, oh, it's whatever, I force myself into that gratitude mode, which is another one of the 10 categories that you spoke about. So all of this stuff kind of interacts together. And something that I've been hearing you talk about specifically, I'm very keen on words and how we start to shift our words and our verbiage throughout life, because I know that our words become our thoughts become our words, but our words also become our thoughts, and our thoughts become our actions. So something that I know that you've been talking about on your podcast a lot recently, and Augie's podcast, Personal Development Mastery, one of my favorite podcasts, the links for everyone listening are in the show notes. I've been interviewed on his show as well, so definitely go check that out. But something I've heard you talk about more recently is a shift more towards spirituality. That's a word that you've been using a lot. So I'm curious where that came from and how you see that difference or similarity, or, you know, spirituality compared to personal development, and what those two to you mean?
It's a great question, and a multifaceted one also. I will start, you know, you were mentioning the words that become our thoughts. Words become worlds. It becomes our world, so they are extremely important. So I'm just emphasizing what you said. Regarding spirituality, I have, let me put it this way, I have two quite distinct sides. One of them is my left brain analytical, you know, scientist with a dentistry degree and a master's degree that requires, you know, evidence, requires an intellectual understanding of things. On the other hand, I have a very dominant, I would say, in many ways, and I will explain what I mean by that, side that is spiritual. I'll use the word and I will explain how I mean it. It is more of a knowing, but not with my mind. And let me explain, because it might be getting a bit, I don't want to sound obscure, but part of the reason why this spiritual part of me that really doesn't require the evidence that the other part of me does and often wins, one of the reasons I am like that is, I believe, because of my history when I was, and I don't remember if we talked about that last time when we met on the podcast, but when I was in university back in Greece, my best friend, who was studying to be a dentist alongside me, at some point felt a very strong calling inside of him to pursue a spiritual calling. There was, you know, nothing before that. All of a sudden, it just came to him. And within 6 months, he dropped out of dental school and he went to Siberia to become a shaman. And since that time, you know, he has traveled the world teaching people and healing. And so what happened was, when he started transforming, I was still, you know, very close friends with him. So I could see his change, his transformation. And because we were, you know, so close, anything that he would tell me, I would just accept it. It would bypass my need, you know, to prove what he was saying. So he was telling me, and that was, you know, nowadays everyone knows what chakras are, or, you know, the astral body maybe, or things like that. But back in the, that was in the 90s, in Greece, where I was, this was not, there was no internet, there was not many people knew what chakras was. So he started teaching me what he was learning, and I could not only understand what he was saying, but I could, you know, he, there were some, let's say, things that I felt that were way beyond the need for proof. Because when you feel something and the other person describes you, oh, are you feeling this right now? You know, I'm just giving an example. But this shaped me, Paul, very much. And this changed me very much as a person at that time, and instilled that element of me that if something, and I'm talking completely personally now, how it works for me, if something feels right, so if I hear about, and I'm talking about now, I don't want to, you know, generalize, I talk about topics or ideas pertaining to spiritual ideas, shall we say, okay? So if it feels right when I hear it, that's it. I don't need to start researching the internet and reading books about to see whether, you know, the gurus agree with this. No, it is, and that has really simplified very much my how this feeling, or knowing is probably a better word, it's not a feeling, that's knowing that I am part of a bigger whole, because that is for me how I, if you ask me to define spirituality, the simplest way I would put it is that I feel being part of something bigger than me. I'm not, you know, separate as we believe with our, you know, egoic identity and so on.
So what I love there, again, words are very important to me. You said, you said feeling, and then you corrected yourself and you said a deep knowing. Mm. And right in the beginning, as you're talking about the logical versus the emotional side of your brain, that's what I struggle with exactly, right? Very similar backgrounds. You were in dentistry. I was in the health and fitness world, but it's the same thing. It's very logic-based. It's very science-based. So then I come up to now throughout my own personal growth journey and reading and going to seminars and learning about the other side of the universe of life, of spirituality, of the things that can't quite be quantified by textbooks or math or science. And yet these are things that have been known for thousands of years and are practiced and are felt by the greater net of humanity, right? Someone in Russia can feel the same way as someone in America and someone in Istanbul. And we just sort of know. And I feel that a lot of people have this knowing inside of them, right? You can call it your gut. You can call it intuition. We all have it. But the hard part is trusting it, because that's what everyone has this as a human, where we just go, well, like, yeah, I kind of get it. I kind of feel it. I kind of know it. We all know what we quote unquote should do. We talked about the shoulds on our last episode, and that's a big one. But we all have this feeling inside of us, this knowing, this, so we are a part of something greater, right? You go out into nature, you see a giant mountain or the ocean or a forest, and you're just like, there's something out there bigger than us. And yet the hard part is to trust it. So how did you start to cultivate that within yourself, especially when you have that science logic brain pushing back at every given moment?
I liked how you described it. You used the word cultivate it. And it certainly is something that I am still cultivating. I have not mastered it. There are a few things that come to mind to answer your question. One of them is you start with smaller things. It's a very simple thing to do. Rather, don't trust it on whether you are going to take a divorce tomorrow or not, but on smaller decisions. It could be, you know, even what to have for lunch or some simple things like that. Practice it. And when I say practice it, how I would do it would be to set mentally the question, the intention. So what should I have for lunch? And stop and allow for an answer to come. Of course, the question there is the answer, does the answer come indeed from my intuition or does it come from my mind? And that, again, it is, I wish there was a simple way to say that it's A or B. Again, it needs practice. It needs, cultivating it so that you know where it's coming from. If I were to give some, let's say, characteristics that have helped me distinguish between, you know, whether the response I'm receiving to my question comes from my heart, shall we say, or from my mind. One of them is that the one that comes from the heart, the soul, the intuition, Paul, I'm using all these words completely interchangeably, and whatever comes more, you know, natural to someone to relate with. When it comes from there, it has for me a feeling like it's coming up, maybe from the heart, from the chest, and it is like a bubbling feeling. It's coming up and bubbling, and very important characteristic, it is not urgent, and it is not something that you think about, you say, oh my God, this is terrible. It's not. In my experience, anyway. Whereas on the other hand, if it is a thought that coming from your mind and not from your heart, it has for me the opposite characteristics. It sounds like it is urgent. It sounds like there is some fear element involved, what if element. And it feels like, for me, like it's falling from the head downwards. It has a heaviness rather than the other, the bubbliness that I was saying. So this, for me, are, you know, more of a, let's say, practical, shall we say, ways that you can use to interpret where it's coming from, whether it's coming from, you know, upwards or downwards. So that's one thing. The other I mentioned already, to use that with smaller decisions first, and when you gain more confidence in it, then you can certainly trust it for the bigger decisions, because you change in a way the more you utilize this power. It's really power we have. We are connected through the universe. We are connected. We always tap into the infinite intelligence that Napoleon Hill used to call it, however you want to call it, the, you know, the one mind or whatever else. So that's, you know, what came to mind as an immediate answer to your question, Paul. There are still some other things I can discuss or not. What do you think?
I love the analogy or the use case that you give for something as small and as simple as choosing what to eat, because this is a huge one that people overcomplicate so much. You know, as a nutrition coach, people come to me all the time, and what they think that I'm going to do is tell them what to eat. That's what they want. They're like, just tell me what to eat. And I always have to say, you know what to eat. You know exactly what to do. One, you know the information. You know that McDonald's is probably bad for you and that a salad is probably good for you. But you also know how things make you feel. Mm-hmm. All the time people will tell me, well, I binge eat and then I feel like garbage the next day. It's like, well, you don't need any more information than that. You're doing things that make you feel bad. Same thing with exercising. People go, oh, when I skip a workout, I feel like crap. And when I work out, I feel good afterwards. When I spend time with my kids and I'm present with them, it feels amazing. When I spend time with my kids and I'm on my phone or answering emails, I'm angry and I'm yelling at them. It's like, it's so simple. And yet the simplest things tend to be the hardest to do. And we end up ignoring them because of whatever reason that's right in front of our face. So I love that you gave that as an example, because we overcomplicate this stuff so much, and we think that we need these complex, convoluted answers. Give me a step-by-step plan. Give me this and that. And at the end of the day, if you just listen to yourself and do what you know to be the right thing to do, you always know the right answer. Should I yell at my spouse, or should I have a nice conversation with them? Should I eat the healthy meal, or should I eat the junk food? Should I sit around watching Netflix, or should I go and play with my kids? Like, it's so binary, it's so obvious, but the rush of the world kind of piles onto us, and that tips the scale in the favor of the negative thing, because we think we have to do that thing. Mm-hmm. And something that we talked about on our last episode was the concept of addition by subtraction, doing less so that we can do more, because we always feel like we have to do more, more, more. And yet somehow often a thing that we know, that one truth, that knowingness, is that like doing less is the ideal. We have too much that we're doing at all times, and somehow doing less is what we all want to do, even if we don't verbalize it consciously like that. So I'm curious if in your transition into more spirituality, into being an author, into all of the things that you're doing now, what did you have to give up or do less of?
Great question. Some inessential things, Paul, is the answer that comes like immediately. Let me explain what I mean. Like you and most people listening now that are on a path of growth, we have the tendency, you know, to fill our plates, shall we say, with lots of stuff. And whenever something interesting catches our attention, we want to do that as well, even though we don't have the time, or it could be a course, it could be an idea, it could be all sorts of different things. But because we are on that path and we want to grow, we get all those things. One of the things that, to answer your question, that I have stopped doing is actions that at some point in the past I thought this is something good to do. Let me give you an example so that I'm more a specific example that comes to my mind was I was up to recently thinking of creating an elaborate funnel for my book, which would, you know, without getting too technical, it would, you know, direct the people on a second page and then on a third page. And then I realized that, yes, I can do that, but the amount of effort and time and resources, if I do it myself, needed for that, are not worth it. And that was something that, more than logically, of course, I can see logically, if you, you know, you put down some numbers and you see that, okay, it could have this outcome or generate this kind of sales, etc., or not. But the numbers aside, for me, when I looked at it and thought, and that was quite recently, actually, it was last week, so it's interesting that I'm talking about it now. I looked at it and I said, you know, in the process of, it's the beginning of 2024, it's still January, there are still, I don't know about you, but I'm still, I haven't finalized the goals for the year. I'm still working on them as I, you know, as they come to me more clearer now. So when I looked at this particular action that I had since last year to do, to create that funnel, it was instinctively or intuitively, a better word, looking at it, it didn't make sense to dedicate time to that right now. Other things, you know, other habits or bits and pieces similar to this, but I just wanted to give a specific example related to my business, but there are similar actions about, you know, what I will eat or not eat, or, you know, it's elimination, but using my inner knowing, shall we say, what you were saying earlier, if you pay attention, you have the inner knowing. If you eat something and you don't feel well afterwards or your energy drops, make a note of it. I mean, it's all you need to do is pay attention. So it is similar. And you get similarly, and that's what happened with me. I removed actions that I don't know if they would move the needle or, you know, I'm not sure, but they, it felt like this is really not the time to spend on this thing anymore. And I don't feel any bad about it either, because, you know, I have this connection, this knowing, this belief that my path, that I am on the right path. And I think that is, you know, something, again, that you can cultivate. It is you, it's something that you gain. It is inner strength in a way, or, you know, self-mastery to be able to have this belief or this conviction that even though, you know, the, let's say, the financial situation is bad, I still feel that I'm walking in the right direction. And that's something that, you know, you can either feel it or not feel it. Yeah, so that's, you know, doing more or less.
Yeah.
Or less.
Yeah, that's, I definitely agree. And again, we've used that inner knowing, that inner compass, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, we talked about already learning to trust that. We all have that inside of us. And it's something that I've seen. We spoke about this a little bit before we started recording, that my goal with this podcast is to find that golden thread of success that all people who are successful in all areas and all endeavors have commonalities in their actions and their thoughts and their beliefs and their patterns. And following that inner compass, that guiding light, that knowing is one of those things. And it leads everyone down the same path, because all of the most successful people in any area of life will tell you the same things of how they got there. We think that it's this big secret, but when you start to dig into it, it's a handful of concepts, of habits, of thoughts, of beliefs. So I'm curious, because you have a podcast with hundreds of episodes where you've interviewed, just as I have, hundreds and hundreds of successful entrepreneurs, CEOs, thought leaders, teachers, different things like that. So what are some of the golden threads of success, one or two that you found that tie all of the most successful people together, no matter what their pursuit is?
It's a great question. And you know, what we have been talking for the majority of the conversation, mastering your emotional state and having some underlying belief in, you might not want to call it spirituality, you might want to call it your life's path or your mission or your North Star, it doesn't really matter, but having that belief. Gratitude, Paul, is another thing that, you know, you mentioned it. It comes up all the time. Maybe not directly in the term gratitude, but maybe indirectly it comes through. And it's no surprise, really. I mean, when you are ungrateful for your life, I can't think right now of someone, you know, successful. And when I mean successful, I don't mean the external success, you know, that someone might have tens of millions in the bank and be miserable. So that's not what, and ungrateful. That's not what I mean success. Success, I mean how you feel. That for me, the success starts with how you feel. If I feel like I'm a multimillionaire, that is really what is important, rather than being a multimillionaire and feeling crap.
Yeah. Well, it's exactly that. It's you know, where we started in the beginning with those 10 categories. That's kind of how I look at this. Those, you know, we have the action steps, but you go a level up to the categories. And these are the general themes that we start to see. Mm-hmm. You know, these words get thrown around: gratitude, consistency, again, mastering your emotions. These are things that some people, we have to teach them and cultivate them in ourselves. But some people are just born with them and have them inherently. And when you look at the most successful people, success leaves clues. That's finding those clues that lead to success that are available for everyone. This is not secret stuff. This is stuff that's out there for every one of us. And those clues are out there. And if we can follow them, we can see that there is a roadmap that's left for us. And that's why I love your book, Actionable Insights, that the 10 categories, these are the things that I'm looking for. It's like, okay, you start to see a pattern of like, these are the things that all of the successful people are doing. Again, either consciously, some yes, but subconsciously. Some people don't realize it's what they're doing, but it is what they're doing. They've cultivated it in themselves by accident, because that's how their parents were, because that's how they were raised, because that's the community they grew up in. It's kind of like the people talk about the blue zones, these areas where people live longer than everyone else. And it's nothing that they're doing consciously or purposely. It's just the world that they live in is different than the world that we live in. And you can take that and put that into a mindset and cultivate and just be like, some people live in a different world. The people who are these successful tech entrepreneurs, they live in a world where failure isn't an option, where they were always going to be. Elon Musk lives in a fantasy world, and yet he's created a fantasy world and made it into reality, because in his brain, he's like, yeah, I'm just going to go to Mars. And like, he just did it. He's like, I'm going to make electric cars that everyone thinks are cool. Before Tesla, everyone thought electric cars were for nerds and losers. And now Teslas are the coolest car in the country. It's like this guy just lives in a dream world, but there was no way where he was going to fail. And he made it into reality, whatever you think about the man, for good or for bad. So I love, again, everything that you're doing. And Actionable Insights, you know, 88 Actionable Insights is the name of the book. Again, linked in the show notes for everyone. I highly recommend checking it out. And I ask every interview, every person I talk to on the show, I've asked you in the past, the last time you were here, but for one action step for listeners to start living a happier, healthier life as soon as this episode ends, and you've given us already, they can go get the book, but if you had to pick just one thing to leave listeners with right now, what would that action step be?
Thank you. I will, let me quickly say that my intention with the book, and actually, if I may, I would like to offer the book as a gift to your listeners, Paul, the electronic version of the book. So if you go to agikeramidas.com/88, you will be able to download the book. And my intention with the book is, out of those 88 insights, to find one. If you find more, that's great. But if you find one insight that resonates and you take it into practice, you take action on it, that can change your life. So that is, for me, you know, the purpose of the book has been fulfilled. If you find that insight that resonates, and then you say, look at that, I read a book and I've done this since then. I started meditating or whatever. And to answer directly your question, I will bring it back to what we were saying earlier about the mastering your emotional state and the emotional vocabulary in particular. So I would invite, as an action, starting now or tomorrow morning, write down a few words about how you're feeling. Try to explore and take a minute. You know, take a minute really and silence and think about, okay, how am I feeling right now? And allow the answer to come and just write it down. And then tomorrow, write it down. And then, you know, a couple of days, write it down. And, you know, that's for me the invitation. Miracles can happen on the other side of it. Don't underestimate how powerful it is.
Amazing. And thank you so much for that gift, offering up that your book for free to everyone listening. That's incredibly generous of you, and I highly encourage everyone to go download that. And as Agi said, you take one thing even away from that book of the 88 actionable insights, even just one could change your life. So I appreciate that. I have Agi's links for the book, his website, his podcast, all in the show notes. So go check him out, get into what he's doing. Agi, thank you so much for being here. I really enjoyed this conversation. Well, I hope you enjoyed those actionable insights. Remember, I'm paraphrasing Steve Jobs when I say, education without action ain't worth squat. All of the insights and the tactics and whatever else can't help you if you aren't putting them to use. And putting them to use starts with the changes in your mindset that Agi and I discussed in this episode. Don't forget to check out Agi's podcast, Personal Development Mastery. It's one of my favorites, and I've linked it in the show notes, including an episode that we recently did where he interviewed me on his show. And don't hesitate to take Agi up on his offer and grab a free copy of his book, 88 Actionable Insights for Life. I've linked to that in the show notes as well, so you can take action right now. And that is change made easy. Before you go, I just have to ask you for a huge favor. If you enjoyed or got value from this episode at all, then take a moment and leave a rating and review in the podcast app that you're listening or watching on. If you like the show and you want me to continue to create more episodes and be able to get awesome guests that will help make changing your life easier, then this is the best way you can show support. You can leave a 5-star review on iTunes, like Eliza Kay, who said, "This podcast is both warm and inviting, but real enough to push and motivate me." Thank you, Eliza. Or you can be like Dalton, who said, "Paul is an amazing host and his podcast is a must listen." Thank you, Dalton. And thank you to all of the over 100 people who have taken the time to rate and review this show 5 stars on iTunes, or the dozens who have left 5-star reviews on Spotify. It only takes a minute and it helps me grow. It helps me reach a new audience, and it lets me know that this is helping someone, which just feels good. All you have to do is go to the show page of whatever app you're listening to and hit the little 5 stars. Or go to the comments section on YouTube and boom, that's it. And if you really want to show love, take a screenshot when you do it and tag me in your stories on social media at Change Made Easy, and I'll shout you out in an upcoming episode. All right, go leave that rating, and I'll see you back here every Tuesday and Thursday with new episodes of Change Made Easy.